Call the meeting of the Wastewater and Water Committee to order. Roll call, please.
Roll call has been taken. Let the record reflect that all members are present, with the exception of District Engineer Harris.
Great. With that, we'll move on to public comments. This is the time of the committee that if any of the public wants to make any comments, they can.
I just want to know if the engineer Shirley's research he did on other agencies that allow opt-out programs is available.
Well,
I guess I realize the answer to questions or not.
Well, we'll ask staff and they'll get back to you.
Okay, that's all I wanted to do.
Okay, with that, we'll close public hearing and go on to approval of the minutes. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second?
I don't have an agenda.
All those in favor?
Aye.
And with that, we'll go into discussion items. Plant facility security upgrade.
Yes.
Staff.
So this was an item that we added for next fiscal year. It's something that's very dear to all of our hearts, just to make sure that our facilities are secure and safe. Bernie and I had a couple discussions, and we added a few items to our security. And you can go through those. They are on page 2 near the bottom under district security. So we've added cameras, gates, and locks, and Bernie's doing the research for those.
So what we've been looking at are security padlocks, which require a fob or a key card, and it attracts and goes in and out when the lock is open. And you'll have a master or a host web to issue the keys, and then each key will have a particular sign number, and then, like I said, it can attract you, opens and close those locks. And that's the same way with the building, in and the building's offload will be the same way. So there's a couple different options we have been looking at in the past. And then on the gate security, looking at putting the same type of system, but it would be a call box where you can scan, you can get a vendor or staff a car with a green swipe go in, or you can leave the gate open at a particular time where it automatically closes to the business hours and automatically shut. There's a couple options that we're looking at to have to narrow down exactly what we want and go from there.
So on the numbers that you have here, I know they're just getting guesstimates.
Yeah.
This would require electrical to be run up to the gates and things like that.
Well, some of them already got electrical there. There used to be some gates in the past.
All right.
But some of the water cycle will have to have maybe some little electrical line.
All right. That's all encompassing in your budget, though.
Correct, yeah.
All right.
Now, just the gates entry or all your locks?
This would be the gate entry and then the locks into the buildings also.
Where the buildings?
Yeah.
Okay, because we have a lot of locks.
Yeah.
Locks,
yeah. I've already got some quotes on all the padlocks and stuff, and that would roughly around 30,000.
Yeah.
The next one will be getting all the buildings. That's what we're working on now, the actual doors.
Because now you've got a lot of hatches on your wastewater lift station.
Yeah.
That are locked.
Right.
And your lock has got to make sure that those gases that get produced in there start to corrode metal. And so we've got to make sure that the locks have a certain metal so it resists the corrosion.
Yeah, and we'll take all that in mind.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did I hear you right? Approximately $30,000 of padlocks?
No, for the padlocks, we're looking at about 40 padlocks. And these are going to have electronic components in it. And they got to be programmed. And then you got an initial setup of the program.
Wow.
And then we build off of that program. So you got about a program that runs the system first, and that's included with that. And we can piggyback on the other stuff.
Would that be similar to what law enforcement has? Maybe some of their like teleports and stuff like that? You would have any of that stuff?
Yeah, we had that. And, it was all keyless, all done by fob. And there's different ways of doing the fob. But we also had the call box to. So if somebody, for example, wanted to come into the Willow to our main office, I don't know if we want to invest that money if we have to make. Relocate the main office, though.
Right.
This becomes a timing and expense issue. But if for some reason we wanted to keep the gate shut, who would have a camera there and a call box and push a button, yeah, I'm here to pay my water bill or whatever it is, and Willow or somebody hit a button and a control open, that kind of thing.
Or you can do it by the telephone. You can also buzz it by the telephone.
Good point, though, Mike, on how far we want to go until we make some other decisions. It's kind of all interacts. But if I'm looking at the budget numbers and I'm seeing that, most of them are going to start, the budget, it starts in July 17th, correct? So can we have that portion of it minus the cameras completed by the end of the year then?
Are we talking about the gates and the locks? Or
well, it looks like the gates and locks are both budgeted for 17-18, right?
Yeah, we just have to finalize.
I think we've been playing with fire, honestly. I think, and I believe that we're having the same. We have the same situation in the office. Nobody's vandalized us yet. And we're in a position with the amount of information that we have and everything else that we should know who's coming in and out of the office. I mean, if for their own protection, if Dean has to come in and work on a Saturday or something, and she slides a card in, and we know that she was there because she had, or you know, so that way we know who's going in. Just using for an example, I think that we need to get to that point at some point, and I know that's down the road.
Sooner rather than later.
Right. I think we've got to be getting away with some stuff. So
yeah.
I would like to see that move forward.
The next part, community, I can bring some information that we've already collected, a general idea of what we're looking at. We got some brochures, and like I said, I've already talked to several different vendors.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll bring some information in.
When it gets down to final talks, I would appreciate maybe being in on that.
Okay, yeah.
Are you guys some experience in this
stuff? Maybe just a tad.
Okay. With that, that's everything you guys have. Okay, we'll go ahead to item two, a water meter project update.
Now I'm going to kind of start this one off and then turn it over to Justin.
And that works, yeah. There's just some map and figure I wanted to provide to the board members.
Okay.
Just a snapshot as of last Wednesday, completing the status of water meters.
Okay.
So I think that you saw the
change. Do you have an extra copy for Mr. Visenton? Thank you. I wanted to start off with just kind of where we are. We've saved all of our type 3s, our most difficult installations, until the very end. But we're starting to accumulate them. And so we met today and had a two-hour meeting on a variety of topics. But one of them were the type 3s that the meter box is either encased in stamped concrete or regular concrete, and what are we going to do in terms of we know we're going to have to saw out a section bigger than the current box that's encased in this, that when we put the new box in, that there will be a anywhere from probably a 4-inch to 6-inch border between the existing concrete and the new meter box. What do we do now? What we contracted JW Backo to do is to put in plain concrete. And so the conversation today was, do we do that for every project? Do we go in and try to contact the homeowner? What's your choice? Do you want us to just leave it open? And we just wanted to run this by the committee, what our thought process is. But what our thought process concluded was is that we're going to, whether it's stamped or regular, we are going to put plain concrete and fill in that gap, mainly because we need to leave the project finished when we depart. We don't want to leave trip hazards or the possibility that they're driving over the meter box and sinking it because it's not as secure in its current location, and that if for some reason they wanted to chip out the concrete around it and do something different, that's a better position for us than leaving these things open or trying to get what are your preferences beforehand. It's going to turn into an administrative nightmare to boot. So we are going to send a letter and some example pictures just to let the residents know this is what's going to happen. But we will also leave a phone number on there for them to contact if they have some serious concerns or they would like to talk about some alternatives we may not have considered. So we do have to leave an open mind out, leave ourselves open for, you know, some variances under certain circumstances. But that's our plan. So we thought we'd weigh in with you on that.
Yeah. My first thought would be, yeah, we need to at least let them, say some guy gets to stamp concrete, whatever color it is, and allow him to go out and get a vendor to fill it back in. We would come in and do that. And that particular case that came to my mind would be to just backfill that with some gravel of some sort so that he could drive over and back and just dig it back out.
Well, we allowed that in one instance,
yeah,
in phase one, and it bit us. Yeah, it bit us. And so that's J.W. Backo's thing is, one, we contracted to put regular concrete around there. We believe that's a finished product that adds stability, and we don't feel good about leaving it open.
Okay.
So my question is, would you give the homeowner the ability to coordinate with their contractor so that they wouldn't have to come and jackhammer out concrete to match the concrete? Would you give them the option to have their contractor available at the time of installation to set it, as long as it was completed that day?
Yes, I think there may be other things that we may be willing to do, and the idea
okay,
is to work
so
with
we're
the
open
homeowner.
To some other options.
Absolutely, this is not like a rigid approach, but our standard approach.
Well, I understand that. Looks to me like just at a glance, about 150 of these pink boxes.
Exactly. Very good, very good. Yeah, and they're going to
grow. That's more than we anticipated. Is that correct?
Well, but they encompass
actually.
Or no? Do we have how many types?
We
okay.
Fewer so far.
Seems like a lot when you're looking at it in the picture, but I can't remember what the original breakdown was.
Yeah.
So we're halfway through the project, 50%. That map shows maybe 48%, but by today we're probably like 52% done with the project.
So we may have a little bit more than we
anticipated. Half the first half of the project is about 150 of the concrete type 3 installation. So if the past is anything to say the future, we might have 300. But I think that exact breakdown isn't known for certain. So, but that's the ballpark that we're looking
what's
at.
What's the
maybe 300 to 400 of these installations by the end of it.
What's the difference between blue and pink?
Blue are the ones that we had to skip because there was something blocking or hindering or encumbering the work.
Mostly a landscaping issue or something like that?
Either a large tree or a car parked over the box or
okay.
Something else that prevented the work.
As opposed to a hardscape problem.
An unidentified surface, maybe the surface was buried and couldn't be located in time for the speed and process at which the crew was going. So
okay.
Some of those are very easy to address, but then, you know, there is some of those that will require special discussions.
Okay, so
do you have anything else?
I think they were going to weigh in on the thought process a little bit.
Well, I think the thought process, I don't have any problem. You guys have researched that, you've analyzed it, you looked at all of it. It's liability is what it really is.
It's
I don't
exactly
limit
right,
the liability.
And safety.
And safety. Ground it all together. But my question would be, if I can see if somebody has the box that's too small, they need to go to the bigger box. You can cut that. So is it a standard that we're going to cut it 6 inches wider, or how wide, or three
and
a half?
The problem is that when you install the meter boxes currently now, the curb stop or the angle meter is not in the same place within that box on all installations. So if this was the meter box and you're looking on top of it, mm-hmm. and the valve could be way over here, which then means this box has got to move over here. If it does, you've got to cut a bigger hole.
Or if it's over
on this side, then you've got to move the box over.
That is very helpful for some of the questions that I've gotten. Thank you for that visual, because it's been addressed with, well, wait a minute, you filled the box up, why'd you have to pull out another extra 2 feet? You didn't have to lock. Well, because
then if it's a small box, and let's just say that the angle meter is right here, generally the plumbing that leaves after that comes down and goes out. We have to dig down until we find it and going this way, find it and put an elbow to come up, because your meter is a certain width-wise, it's got to fit in and then come down. Some you might get lucky where it goes straight, but those are rare.
Well, back to the colored concrete one, let's assume the worst, you had to move it forward now, so now we've got a space behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was visualizing when you make the presentation, it's just going to be a 6-inch
yeah.
square all the way around, which might not look bad because it'd be the same color as the box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's not going to be true.
Now, not another option.
Symmetry won't be there.
Yeah. We did on one home, well, we didn't do it, but we offered it to the one home. We did have to, in a stamped concrete driveway, we had to take a bigger chunk out. And we did recommend to the homeowner is you can put a larger box in that spot and then fill the rest up with gravel. So they selected that option. I said, your choice now is we do it or you do it. And they said, they'll do it.
Yeah. That's not always going to work.
It'd be because they didn't want to pay our cost.
Right, right, right. So, okay.
I just gave them that option and said, here's where you can get that box.
That would be good information for the homeowners to know that they have an option. If it's, let's say they have to move it forward, it's going to leave a big gap in their concrete, that there are bigger boxes which could reverse that a little bit. I don't know how we get that across, but.
Well, and the problem is that, yeah, Dean is going, oh, that's so labor intensive that, and we don't know until we begin work on it.
Yeah, I think the first approach is that the initial letters go out saying our standard approach is a gray concrete, yeah. And then at least from there we start a conversation with customers or with residents who don't like that option, because as of now there's probably a vast majority of people who don't mind the gray concrete option, so at least we've eliminated a lot of uncertainties there right off the bat. So just getting the message out as quickly as possible that if they want something else, they do need to contact the district to coordinate that. When in talking to the contractor, it would be an unfavorable option to do a scenario where we provide them an option to leave some sort of gap that they come back and put back their own concrete in their own way, because that means he'll have to walk away from the project as an unfinished product. So as a standard, we don't want to approach that. But as a on a site by site basis, I think we can work with the homeowners to develop something that they want. The idea is to get that initial letter out telling them what the plan is and some photos of what it might look like based on some of the prior installations. So at least people have an idea of what.
I think that's fine. And if we send the letter out with some examples, and the homeowner doesn't get back to us and where they're doing our work,
we kind of have to just keep.
Yeah, we got to keep going. Yeah, I agree. We gave them an offer. Now that letter would be in their hands. Approximately. So,
timing wise.
Oh, we're going to start. I think I'm for starting as early as possible. I hope to. I would love to get the letters out by the end of next week or the beginning of the following week, so that they have as much notice as possible. Right. Where we had most of our complaints before, lack of notice. So I want to give them early notice and give them that time to explore options and get back.
In that notice, are we going to give them an approximate time frame?
I don't think so, because
I mean, even by the months, and say, well, we're probably going to be doing.
What they end up getting is the 10-day door hanger. That's what tells them.
Yeah, we'll mention something as the project nears. You will get a door hanger, etc. That gives a 10 to 14 day notice, and then.
I guess the concern is that if you give an early notice and provide a lot of time, it might mean we're having a lot of those conversations right before the start of construction. We'd rather have those conversations much sooner. So,
I agree.
In reality, we'll provide, there will be, several months before they'll be out doing the work.
And here's the other magical thing that we've already experienced. Estimate seems to drop off from the lexicon, and it becomes a fixed thing, like $960.
Right.
And the whole estimate thing went away, and that became fixated. So if you say, we'll be there approximately this time, they're going to say you didn't show up, or you came early, or whatever it is, and you leave yourself open.
But you told me, well, no, I really didn't. I said about.
Well, it appears that you guys have thought through pretty much every scenario. It's
been a lot of discussion.
All right.
Well, we still have what we call the difficult ones. Mm-hmm.
Right.
An example is a person who's built their mailbox over the meter box. We've given them notice to remove the mailbox.
They physically built it over the top of the
box. Oh, yeah. They used the meter box as your base.
That's your base in the concrete.
That's correct.
Some people got rid of the meter box and just concreted over the whole thing. It's somewhere under a driveway.
Okay. So how do you find that water line? Dividing rod. I saw a paper wagon or whatever that was. Yeah.
So anyway, those are ones we're going to have to deal with as we. How the hell do we do? How do we work with those?
Right.
What we're very sensitive to is to provide, you know, excellent customer service as balanced against practicality, you know, and keeping the job efficient and affordable.
Correct.
Okay.
Anything else, Justin?
I think that covers it.
Thank you.
All right. You got my blessing. Hey, carry on, man. All right. Next item is going to be the Plant One discussion and finalized revision.
And this matter, we danced around a variety of things on what are we going to do with Plant One. It's time to make a decision and move forward with a defined plan. And so we put Bernie and Greg Harris into a room together and told them come out with a mutually acceptable pathway towards this end. And Bernie is here to report that was a successful meeting.
Is that why Greg's not here?
Yeah. No. So I turn it over to you.
Greg's still in the room.
To form out a plan moving forward. So the plan moving forward, as we see here in red on page 2, at the top of the page, we have broken down different stages of work at Plan One. This is basically just rehab work. So in the current 17-18 year budget coming out, we identified I made a suggestion. The current thing that we would be using at Plant One, if we really needed something, if we had a failure, would be the clarifiers. So we want to address the clarifiers this coming year, also with the inlet pump station odor control system, rehab that, and then also work on the drainage system at the plant. So when we get heavy rains at Plant One, it just floods and everything currently just sits until we have to manually pump everything from one tank to the next. So we want to put it in the drainage system where it drains over to the storage pond. And then lift station W needs some work because the gate that is currently in the structure is inoperable, and we're running two pump stations when we only need to run one pump station.
Didn't we just do something with pump station W 2 years ago?
Well, we rehabbed it. We are in front of it, but there's a huge manhole in front of W and plant number one, or inlet pump station, that through the years the gases have corroded stainless steel, I believe it was.
Yeah, it's all fusing together into the concrete.
Okay.
But that rehab of W did not include that manhole.
Okay, all right, just asking.
So that's on the agenda for the first phase of the work. At Plant One, along with, yeah, that's it. And then moving into 18-19, we'll be moving over to repair the oxgauge, repair all the seals, cracks, and coating of the metal, along with the rotors, and repairs that need to be there, and then move to the third year of 19-20, looking at redoing the headworks there, recoating, plastering the headworks, and then 2021 look at the electrical and generator, tying that project into with the D5 project, the denitrification project at that time. If the denitrification project gets pushed out, we still would need to do something with the NCC at Plant One along with the generator for this.
The NCC is
motor control
the
center.
The motor control center runs everything there. It's been pieced together so much that most of it just runs in hand now. There's no automation there.
So it's all manual?
Well, when we run the oxygen, we have to run them manually. They will not run auto. You have to manually turn them off and on. And so, like, Plant 2 now.
Did we rob things out of that, or is it just old?
Just old over here, okay. Yes. And the components are not there.
And we've kind of put off making any decisions about that, because we're falling to that point where we need to start making some decisions.
Correct.
Yeah. I kind of neglect it. Have we seen enough history now to, we're never going to probably ever figure it out why our MPGs have decreased by 30%.
Well, our what has increased?
Well, I'm saying that wrong. What's our fluid number?
Flow has decreased compared to.
What's that? It's MGD, right? No. Okay, our MGD has reduced about 30% over the last
few years.
4 years or so. We were 1.8, 1.9, or 1.4. Okay, I'm throwing out numbers. I'm probably not completely accurate, but I'm in the ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
Probably aren't going to ever really figure that out, which bugs the crap out of me. But nonetheless, we're probably never going to figure that out. But do you think we have enough history behind us now? Do you think that we're
I can answer you for Greg, and he'll say no.
Now he thinks you need to wait until after the media project is over and have a year of data after the media project.
And he has indicated to me, and I think to us, that even other customers that he is
are experiencing some of that from the drought and all that. That
because of the drought, and then plus with the
that's my concern.
Newer homes going in, and now you have less water, you have more solids, but less water. Plus two, we have found through the cameras that we put in through the sewer main, we found two major leaks where water was coming in, groundwater or treatment that would come in and would accumulate. Running 24/7, that water was coming in. We treated, and then when we found those leaks, then we went and plugged them up.
So we were treating groundwater.
We were treating groundwater.
And those have been repaired.
I asked the same question every time we get together. There's my dilemma. My dilemma is, do we have enough history to start making, are these decisions going to affect, actually what we're doing is we're just increasing the redundancy with these decisions right here, correct?
That's all you're doing.
Okay.
You're just taking what you got and putting a sandblast and putting
If 2 years from now we find out that in fact things are stable, and Gregory's happy and we're all happy and we agree that we're stable with regards to a flow and we're pretty much built out, we know that we're not going to increase our flow unless a major, you know, they develop someplace else and we use our plant, then we could talk about whether or not we're going to use that oxidage for denitrification or whether we need it for redundancy. I know I know what your position is.
But the decision that you made, which how you're going to treat the denit or nitrification somewhere here in the next couple of years. So once the new master plan is written, that's the Bible that Gregory goes by, and he's going to follow it if you need it or you don't.
That's probably a problem too. But nonetheless, we're not doing anything that hinders either direction we want to go. We're not backing into a box.
Not right now.
Okay.
And there's more to this project.
The other part of the project of 1718, is we wanted to add a reclaim line where we want stuff. So we can, one of Gregory's issues is running plant one periodically, which we've had some discussion. So to compromise on that, what we talked about doing is running it with water, just plain water periodically. Instead of using our fresh water, which is going to be about 2 million gallons, we want to run our number 3 water over there, and then we can use our number 3 water when we don't cost to the district to test the equipment periodically.
The only cost is going to be transporting the water across the street.
Well, just putting allowance of that, and then it's just
but we have to add a line to do that, right?
The line's already there.
We got a T into
it.
Okay. It already goes under the road.
Always under the road.
Okay.
Yes.
So what we're looking at is roughly $1.5 million, $1.5 million over a 4-year period.
Yeah, it was 1.38, I believe, now it's 1.476.
And this will make it dependable. We'll exercise the plant in a creative way using our purple water.
Correct.
And it's a win-win situation without going way overboard.
And we don't lose our infrastructure.
Correct.
Correct.
And also, if we run that purple pipe over there, if we ended up with another drought, we could set up a resident
fill station.
We need to get permitted to do that, but I think that's one of the things we want to be is permitted anyway, and that creates options for it.
Yeah, once you get your tertiary or your top 22, your permit.
Right. So 3 to 4 years down the road.
What's happening with the big ditch over there? It used to be
a jet plant.
At plant one, we used to have
right now it's probably about 40% full of water.
Rainwater.
A lot of it's rainwater, stormwater. Because
it's just been sitting in there?
A few years ago, we had to dam off any water that left that plant and went into the drainage ditch. We had to collect it all and treat it all. And so with the heavy rains, that's a big area. You're talking 7-8 acres of land. That running's got to come in. You got to collect it.
So we're sucking it out every now and then.
No, we don't suck it right now. It's just evaporating.
Oh, you just let it evaporate.
And the only thing we're doing extra is just putting mosquito fish in there.
Oh, okay. That was my next
mosquito fish at bay. I mean, mosquitoes at bay.
Because I actually was the one that asked for that for mosquito vector to come, and it came the one meeting that I wasn't here. So I know that in the past they have warned us that we have had a potential for mosquitoes over here in our test area, wetlands.
Yeah.
So where? What's the result?
We shut that down.
It's gone.
And oh, so Berkeley, usually Berkeley's not out there anymore.
No.
So it's dried up.
They expanded it down in Southern California. They, what worked here, they just made it larger in Southern California.
So all that mosquito risk thing that we came down a couple of years ago to us, we were contacted over there, just before your time, by mosquito vector saying we were breeding out there. That's take care of.
Yeah, the only thing is you don't know where we got that drainage that's still there, and some of that water is stagnant unless it rains, because it's got a weir at both ends and it's got a raise, but that doesn't come from us. That comes from the farmers. But that's the only mosquito area next to our plant right now.
Okay.
The other item that was on here that I just noticed was the influid pump station, odor control. Is that similar to what I just...
Yeah, that means something we'd be looking at,
I gave Bernie today some information on it. I got a website thing about odor control, spraying and all that for the headworks out there, long 15, because you have the smell. I didn't know.
Yeah, that's not fine.
That was in the budget, or at least you're thinking about it, so okay.
That's why we're putting it at the top of the list, to get that addressed.
Great. Okay.
So, I'm glad to see this here. I'm glad to see you here.
Yeah, but I think we've came full circle, you know, from the standpoint of shutting it down and trying to sell the property to keeping it for, you know, redundancy, and now coming up with a plan for, I'll call it a modest investment over all this other things we're doing. How long do you think that these investments and improvements will give us? How much life do you think before we have to start putting more money in?
Into plant one?
Yeah.
Well, I think generally the rule, as I understand, you would like to check your oxidation ditches and clarifiers at least every 7 to 10 years, you know, where you drain them and you look at it.
Right.
So the improvements you make to the oxidation ditch, like at plant number two, we took down oxidation ditch number two and we popped it on a few areas there.
We rehabbed it.
And then so the next one is ox ditch number one, which is plant number one. And then probably 5 to 7 years from now or more would be ox ditch number three, which is our plant number two.
Rotation just continues.
Yeah, so that way you can look at and see what's wrong, because they operate 24/7.
Right.
And so you want to be able to shut it down and see the bottom.
Right, but on plant one, we won't be going 24/7.
No, right now we'll just be filling up the
running from when you're doing the other oxygen one or three. So this investment, as we look out into the future, should give us a 7 to 10 year period of no major investments needed.
Right. Yeah, Greg had told me about 20 years. This should really last.
Yeah, 20 years. Well, a long time.
But
when
still have to have PM, but right. Major infrastructure improvements won't be needed for another 20 years.
One of the things that Dina and I are going to be working on is, and it's starting with little chunks, and we're going to move to bigger chunks, but we're starting to identify all the property and assets that we have, from tools to with ox ditch repair. And identifying these things early and giving them a life, and then starting to do accounting based on pre-funding for future replacement as these things become due. Now, this has always been wait till it breaks and find the money somehow and fix it. So now we want to start pre-planning. Of course, the thing about it is we have no free money, so we've got to start building that. But that's how we're going to start building the budget for the future, that we are already investing in the repairs, the replacements, the depreciations, and pre-funding those as they occur. It'll take a while, but that's what we're working on.
Help us build better rate studies, better capacity connection fees to ensure our infrastructure's work.
I think it's a good plan.
Yeah.
Works for me. Thank you guys for addressing this.
Yeah. Okay. Any other items on that? Yes.
For the future, we talked about we have a sewer main on Wayfair Court.
Yeah.
That's starting to grow. Part of the sewer main is ductile iron and part of it is PVC. There's ductile iron intermixed within three manholes on that street. For whatever reasons, we don't know why they didn't make it all PVC, but they made some sections ductile and some PVC. The ductile has corroded on the inside, and so we're looking at replacing that, and we got a preliminary figure of close to $200,000 for 400 and some odd feet of that. But before the next step is you asked me to go out and get them, look at it.
Right, I think Gregory was gonna, he got it to you.
He gave me a rough figure.
Oh, okay.
And I'm sharing with you the rough figure. Okay. But we really can't discuss it because not in the agenda. That's why we like the committee meetings.
Well, you're doing a mini, yeah. You're doing
that's why I want you to add it to your next one. We'll talk about it and give you.
So I do have that on the budget. It's actually under vehicle and equipment purchases, the 235 feet, but we have 100,000 more. So now we
have to
okay.
But and then so what,
when will you let me know?
You know, which there are so many variables in this, meaning that one, the street is tight and narrow, and you got a lot of homes, so you have a lot of sewer connection laterals. So it means that you have to dig wherever that section of ductile iron is, every one of those connections going to that home, you then have to put a clamp around that, what we call a connector to connect from whatever pipe they have going to their home. You also, at the same time, coordinate with each homeowner, don't flush the toilet, don't take a shower, don't have water or anything coming down that line while we tear that out and remove that section. And plus traffic, moving traffic in and out of there is tough. Because of that. But an unknown for us is different types of pipe, ductile iron pipe, PVC pipe. The inter part diameter generally is different than the diameter of the PVC pipe versus the iron. The outer diameter is generally different. What we don't know is what that looks like underground right at the moment, nor do we know what other utilities may hamper us from doing some of that work or make it tougher. You may only dig 20 feet a day, or you may do 50 feet a day because there are multiple gas lines going across or electrical wires going across. I would like to suggest that we pothole, do a USA request. The USA request would force the utility companies to come out and mark where the utilities are, so then we know we can pothole to make sure how deep they are. And then one of the potholes, if not, we would like to do is where we think the ductile iron joins the PVC, how do they connect that to? Because you need to address that with your contractor and don't leave it as an unknown because they could come back to you later and say, you didn't tell me this was this, and I planned this and not that.
Well, with our luck, you plan for the worst scenario.
I know that, but we don't know. We would like to...
Could be the worst.
Yeah.
We'd like to pop on and dig a couple spots, but before you do that, you want to call the USA.
Yeah.
So what... I know we'll talk about it more detail at the next meeting, but just ballpark talk to how far out in the future is this project?
I think it should be done late this year, if not early part of next year.
Because
but you want to get away from the storms because you don't want to make it rain and muddy and then.
No.
because you'll have to use a lot of steel plates out there. Once you dig beneath the plates, and like I said, the streets are narrow, the houses are narrow.
So the need for it is the ductile iron is failing.
The ductile, based on the camera shots we saw, it is starting to fail.
Correct.
And we can't clean it.
And these are where? Located where?
What's that?
Located where?
It's on Wake Airport. And those are mainly the condos that face Highway 4.
Cherry Hills.
Cherry Hills.
The extension of Cherry Hills.
Now, the other part of that is that the steakhouse and that complex enters into that manhole right there at the end, and they have a section of ductile iron pipe, which we've sent a letter to Dr. Mike indicating you may have a problem. But let's just say, for example, so you understand, if we were to start that, we have to put a plug on that manhole outlet going down towards the sewer plant, put a pump in there to pump that, whatever comes in from those four homes and the steakhouse, whatever fluids come in, pump it, lay it on the road, and then cars have to be able to drive over to get in through their driveway. You have to build ramps so that you can drive over it. Put it in the next manhole and let it go down. That's what we call bypassing. You have to do that on each manhole that you move down.
Okay, we'll talk more about it on that.
I know, but I just wanted to be aware that it's not exactly an easy thing to just do.
Okay, so in the future,
no, I'm sure you guys will come up with something.
The only issue I do mention
is that.
Oh, yeah, I do. I need. I would like to adjust the time of the meeting moving forward to 4 p.m. instead of 3 p.m.
Are there any major issues on it, I guess?
I'm trying. If I just move to 4, it gives me a little bit of breathing room without keeping people past their. I know you. I know Virgil likes to leave right at. No, I'm just kidding.
It's overtime for me. So that's
would 3:30 be a happy compromise? Or?
Well. I tend to seem to make it work.
We'll be fine with 4.
3:45.
Let's make it 4 o'clock.
Whatever.
4 o'clock is fine.
Nice.
Well, in case we run late, we'll be less fine.
What we'll do, Virg, is
it'll make
if you've got
the,
anything, we'll get your stuff on
efficient
first.
Efficient in the way we run the meeting.
Can leave.
Right.
Good man.
Okay.
How long are we here today? Perfect. 45-minute meeting. I love it. Are we done?
We're done.
Okay.
Nice to meet you.
Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.